This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at mofad.org.
This week on Meat and Three, we bring you stories about the coldest, darkest season. We start in a California vineyard.
It's cold, but it's wet, and things are still alive. There's a lot of life in this soil.
We explore two frontiers of cocktail culture: luxury ice, and the rise of non-alcoholic drinks.
The rocks traditionally becomes 25% of your drink's volume, and as such, it imparts smells and tastes.
And we investigate the risks facing New York City delivery workers during the harsh winter.
In the wintertime, after 2 hours of biking, it's quite easy, actually, for the bikes to spin upside down or slip or slide.
Tune in to this week's episode of Meat and Three, that's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E, for some food for thought to sustain you through the dead of winter. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, Bomb Squad. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. Radio Cherry Bomb is the number one female-focused food podcast in the country. Each week, we talk to the most inspiring women in and around the world of food. Did any of you celebrate Galentine's Day? If you did, happy belated Galentine's Day. Let's thank our sponsor, Handsome Brook Farm Organic Pasture-Raised Eggs. Handsome Brook Farm's secret to making rich, flavorful eggs is simple. The most possible space, the best possible feed, and lots of love. It's a healthy and humane recipe that makes your omelets, cakes, custards, and everything in between taste better. For more on Handsome Brook Farm and where to find their eggs, visit handsomebrookfarm.com. Have you gotten your ticket to Jubilee 2019 yet? Jubilee is our annual conference, and it will take place in Brooklyn on Sunday, April 7th. There will be great food, lots of networking opportunities, book signings with your favorite authors, and talks from the most interesting chefs, writers, and entrepreneurs. Tickets are on sale now at cherrybomb.com. Let's talk about today's interview. If you listened to our Superwoman Superfood miniseries last year, you might remember today's guest, Hannah Bronfman. Hannah's a real doer. She's the founder of the wellness website HB Fit. She's an entrepreneur, DJ, brand ambassador, and now she's an author. Her very first book is called Do What Feels Good: Recipes, Remedies, and Routines to Treat Your Body Right. It's a hybrid cookbook, self-help book, and wellness manual that encapsulates her beliefs about body positivity, focus, and true beauty. When I was a teenager, I loved beauty books and makeover books, but back then, there was only one definition of beauty and one ideal body weight. I wish there had been books like Hannah's that were more forgiving and more based in reality, but at least Hannah's around today to inspire and motivate everyone. Before we get to Hannah, we have a word from Handsome Brook Farm Organic Pasture-Raised Eggs. Handsome Brook Farm believes that organic and pastured is the way to go when it comes to eggs. Pasture-raised means better lives for hens, better lives for small farmers, and better eggs for you. It's also better for chefs who depend on rich, flavorful eggs. Handsome Brook Farm's own flock of amazing chefs, their mother hens, count on it. Suzanne Vizethan is a mother hen. She's the chef and owner of Buttermilk Kitchen in Atlanta. Curious how Chef Suzanne makes her French toast with caramelized bananas? The ingredients include whole milk, chia butter bread, and some Handsome Brook Farm eggs to make each slice as fluffy as can be. Or, if you're like me and have a serious love affair with pimento cheese, you can make her pimento cheese omelets. Suzanne whips up 3 Handsome Brook Farm eggs, lets the omelet set, then adds red pepper jelly, thick-cut bacon, and my beloved pimento cheese to put a delicious southern spin on a breakfast favorite. You can find Chef Suzanne's delicious egg-centric recipes and videos on handsomebrookfarm.com. If you're looking for Handsome Brook Farm organic pasture-raised eggs, you can find them at Publix, Kroger, Sprouts Farmers Market, Fresh Direct, and many natural food stores across the country.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Hey there, seems like you like podcasts. My name is Eli Sussman. I'm a chef and restaurant owner, and I've got a great podcast right here on Heritage Radio Network called The Line. On my show, I interview chefs and restaurateurs about the trajectory of their career. It's a one-on-one conversation where we talk about where it all started, to where they are cooking now, and everything in between. You can find The Line everywhere you get your podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
I am obsessed with your book.
Stop.
I know you've been talking about the book for a while, and I don't know you well. I mean, I know we know each other professionally, but I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
I think you put out a killer book.
I really appreciate that.
And it's called Do What Feels Good, Recipes, Remedies, and Routines to Treat Your Body Right.
Do you feel like you know me a little bit better now?
A little bit, but nothing in there surprised, like knowing what I know about you to date, nothing in there surprised me.
Cool.
But I did feel it was filled with super useful information.
Oh, coming from you, that means everything. Yes, that was what my goal was.
So why, with all the things you're doing, and you are the most multi-hyphenated person, is that the right term? The most multi-hyphenated person, I know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Why did you want to add author to that list?
Honestly, I just felt like, you know, I share so much of my life on social media, and I have HB Fit as a platform, but I never really talk about why wellness is so important to me and kind of the backstory there. And I kind of wanted to give people a little bit more context, kind of in a way that allows me to kind of control the narrative. A lot of things, sometimes when you're talking on Instagram or actually prompted from something, maybe like, you know, from a different place, and it's everything's out of context. So I really wanted to kind of write something down for everyone, and just really like the amount of knowledge I've gained over the last, you know, decade of talking to incredible wellness experts and different doctors and nutritionists and homeopaths and acupuncturists. Like, I just have a lot of knowledge, and I've tried so many things that I kind of just wanted to put it all in one place that felt like a index of sorts that wasn't telling you how you should live, but things that can help you live more fulfilled.
I mean, if you are in need of a mantra for 2019, you all should adopt Hannah's title.
I love that.
I mean,
yes.
It's such a good thing to have in your head. Because I know a lot of times, like, you go through life and you're like, you just want some guidance or some help. And sometimes those mantras really help. Like one of the ones I have here that the team hears me say at the office all the time is, if you have to ask the question, you know the answer.
I like that one too.
And you will find that that is true like 95% of the time.
I live by that mantra basically, but I've never realized it because my whole thing is that I'm trying to slow down, because if I slow down, I don't actually ask the question out loud because I know the answer to it.
And maybe that's not the exact right definition of a mantra, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just something that you have in your head. And I think yours is something like that too, because if you're faced with a choice and it's like, do what feels good.
And you know, it's funny, like, I've tried so many ways of eating, ways of working out, like certain approaches that I'm supposed to try for this, that, and the other thing. And I've tried things that have definitely given me results that didn't feel good at all. You know, like,
for instance, eating keto for me, I definitely saw results, but it did not feel good eating bacon and eggs and, you know, literally mayo on a small slice of turkey. Like, it just, that's not what feeling good meant for me. And so, like, that's like what I mean. Like, results and feeling good aren't necessarily one and the same.
And also, people need to remember that the book isn't called Do Whatever the Hell You Want.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Because sometimes doing what feels good is also doing what is, like you said, doing what is right for you, but doing what's healthy.
Right.
You know, and feeling good, you've got to figure out what does make you feel good.
Totally. And even like as simple as something like, you know, eating a slice of pizza. For someone, that could feel really good. And for another person, that could feel really bad. You know what I mean? And it's all about our relationship with food, our relationship with ourselves, how we're feeling, and like really like getting into tune with that, right? So it's a prompt of a question that hopefully is making you go deeper. And what I always say, like when people are like, oh, what do you want, you know, people to take away from the book? And I'm like, I really just want people to have a better understanding of themselves. Like for me, this book asks you like some pretty real questions that I feel like we can mask and lie about to ourselves all the time. And this is really asking you to go deeper and really be truthful with yourself, because, you know, in order to have personal growth, we need to shed layers and let go of things. And it's really hard to let go of things, especially if you're not in therapy and you don't have an outlet and, you know, people aren't asking you how you feel, or maybe they are and you're lying to them, you know? So it's like, it's really only up to us. And so that's what I'm hoping this book is helping people do.
And you sort of got to that point, if I'm remembering this correctly from the book, when you were DJing, because you were saying yes too often, you weren't taking care of yourself, yep. You were leading a lifestyle that wasn't the healthiest. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was definitely fun. I was DJing a ton, going out with my girlfriends, drinking, eating late night food, not caring, thinking I was like invincible. And then, you know, waking up at 6 p.m., sleeping all day. Like, she just got scared.
Oh my God, waking up at 6 p.m. What time did you go to bed?
I mean, 7 in the morning, wow. Right? So, yeah, theoretically, like, good 11 hours sleep right there. But no, that lifestyle is super, you know, it's just, I was so burnt out and it's not sustainable. And my skin was a mess and my gut was a mess. And I just felt like I was going to like fade into nothing. Like it was like, I couldn't, it's like, oh my God. And then I was starting to dread having to DJ that late and then having to repeat the whole cycle. And you just kind of give in, because what are you supposed to do when you're DJing till 4 in the morning? You know, you're not doing that sober. At least I wasn't. So I kind of woke up one day and really said to myself, like, this needs to change. There needs to be a significant change here. I want to get back to feeling really good and doing things that I like to do for myself. I'm an active person. I want to have my morning. I want to have my routines. And
I read you're a morning person.
I am a morning person.
Not so easy when you're a DJ.
No, the opposite of that. But I literally wake up in the morning, like just shoot out of bed and I'm like ready to go. Like I'm not one of those people who are like, don't talk to me before 10 a.m.
My girlfriend Renee does one of those morning dance things.
Oh.
Do you know about these like morning AM discos?
I've DJed one. Yeah. These like morning sober raves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was like it was a big thing for a while. I'm sure they're still happening. Personally, like I said, I'm a morning person, but I don't think I'm a morning rave person. And honestly, DJing one of those events was very bizarre for me. Very, very bizarre. And it was like a very early call time. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't know about this.
So you're a morning person, but not that much of a morning
exactly.
person.
Yeah, exactly. Your friend sounds like the ultimate morning person.
She is. I have so many follow-up questions for you based on the book that I had to keep a little list for myself. Granny Ann. Mm-hmm. You dedicate the book to Granny Ann. Which grandmother is Granny Ann?
My father's mother.
Okay. She sounded a little scary. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Granny Ann.
Not as scary as my mom's mom, who we actually don't have a relationship, because my mom actually left home when she was 18 never really looked back. She married my father, which was not the choice of the family, for either family, really. And Granny Ann, who again was not in favor of them getting married. Everything was turned around when they had their first child, my older sister, Vanessa, and they were so welcoming and lovely. And so then when I was born, I got to know my Granny Ann, and she was scary. She was a petite German Jew who grew up very wealthy in New York and kind of had this air of snootiness and kind of, but also she was an alcoholic. And she had, you know, been on medication since she was quite young because her brother, she's a twin, and her brother was born with a slight amount of cerebral palsy. And her parents blamed her that she had done something in the womb to him. And so he had to be on a lot of medication when he was little. So they put her on medications when she was little.
Oh, what a terrible story.
Honestly, terrible. And I think about this a lot, actually, about how horrible the generations were before us in terms of the non-communication, the alcoholism, the drug abuse. And those are kind of things we don't necessarily talk about, but we do talk about it now because my generation is the over-communicative, you know, and like we have a lot of issues talking to our parents because our parents were taught to keep everything internal because they are the ones dealing with the parents who were alcoholics who would literally beat you if you spoke out of turn, right? So it, as a very young girl, she was, very proper and prim. And like my dad always told me the story that one night, and he kind of thought it was funny, which is also like just, you know, a little crazy as well. But like, you know, she was out to dinner one night and one of the guys with the bread came around and she snapped at him and said, "Never serve bread to a lobe." It's like, first of all, how the hell was he supposed to know who the heck you were and that you wouldn't want bread? Like, you know what I mean? It's just like this air of snootiness. So she was really scary and not like the warmest of grandmas. You know, she was like no Nona, you know what I mean? Yeah, so I was always expected to be kind of proper around her.
And you looked completely different from her.
Yes.
That must have been challenging.
I looked very different from her. It wasn't that challenging because
For you to not look anything like her, did she treat you differently?
No, she didn't.
She didn't.
And I felt, honestly, I never really felt weird about not looking like the rest of my family because I knew my parents, right? Like I knew my mom and I knew my dad and I looked like a mix between the two of them. And I found that totally normal. And it actually wasn't until my younger brother was born from my father, my stepmom, when he asked me why I was brown and he wasn't, that I started to really realize that like, okay, they're like, this is something totally normal that kids deal with. I just never really...
So she wasn't chilly because of that. She was just chilly.
She was just chilly. She was just a chilly woman. So, but I, you know, my mom always had me in these like insane cute outfits. So she always thought I looked so cute. And so she always wanted to be like a little bit more bubbly around me. She just didn't know how. She didn't have that in her demeanor. She'd never had that growing up. She'd never met a child who made her feel this way, right? So I kind of always knew that we had a special relationship and that she saw something in me that she almost envied. She deprived herself of so much. She treated herself with such negativity. And the people around her did as well. And I think she saw like a very innocent, bubbly young girl with so much opportunity and wonder that she was almost like, wow, like who would have thought that this was even possible? And so we actually became really, really close, even though I was terrified of her. And she was really cool. I mean, she ended up being in love with her best friend and they kind of spent the rest of their life together, her best friend Janie. They ended up sailing around the world together. She like got into a boating accident, like chopped two of her fingers off.
I read
and,
that crazy.
Like, you know, and she owned it and she would like, she, you know, she made no apologies. Like, don't look at her differently. Like, you know, so she was just really powerful and she knew what she wanted. She was very demanding. And so it was really interesting to see how I could slip into her cracks. You know what I mean? I just remember telling her that I wanted to be a ballerina. And I remember when I told her that I wanted to be a ballerina, she also was like, okay, well, if you don't want to be a ballerina, that's okay too. And that was kind of the first time I ever kind of heard her tell me that I could do whatever I want to do in not so many words. She was a woman of few words. But we just kind of had this connection. And then, so yeah, and so then she just kind of in my late teens, she got really sick and she struggled, she, again, still struggling with alcoholism and pain meds. And so that was really hard to watch, was kind of just her deterioration. And then when she passed away, I really like realized that I kind of wanted to live the happiest and healthiest version of myself that I knew how to do, because I knew she had never been able to do that for herself. And I kind of saw what she saw in me. It's funny, like even now when if I go to a psychic or a medium or things like that, which I love doing, like my grandmother is always the first person in the room. Always, no matter what. And even that I'm talking about her right now, like I know she's like, she, as soon as I say her name, she's always around me. Like we just had like this connection, which I can't really describe, but I, you know, she was really impactful to me.
Why do you love going to psychics and mediums?
I don't really know, because I like, well, I have this idea of where I think I'm headed. And so they kind of just tell me if what they see for me is kind of what I see for me. And I kind of like that. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
All right. The tattoo story. Oh, I still can't. Is this thing really on your head?
It's here. It's really there. It's not going anywhere.
Oh my God. Tell everybody the story.
So when I was in college, I was 20 years old and I had gone with my friend for her to get a tattoo in Woodstock. So I went to school in the Hudson Valley and we went to Woodstock and my girlfriend got this beautiful tattoo on her arm and it was just her and I, and we were chatting with the tattoo artist and I had never wanted a tattoo. Like I really was like, you know, I grew up Jewish and, you know, I knew the consequences and I just also didn't want to be, I remember
tell people
saying,
the consequences for those who don't know what that means.
Oh, well, depends on your family. Mine was like literally like tattoo and you're excommunicated. But like in all seriousness, like, you know, you can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery, even though my grandmother was cremated, just, you know, whatever. So I went with my girlfriend and I was chatting with a tattoo artist and she was saying, I also said like, oh, I never want to be, I don't like when someone's getting married and you can see all their tattoos and what happens when you're old and you have tattoos, like what does that look like? And my girlfriend's covered in tattoos. And I was saying how terrified I was and that like what's going to happen when her arms are sagging when she's like 80 years old and she's got these tats and whatever. And we were having a laugh.
She said, Hannah, I'm doing what makes me feel
good.
Yeah,
exactly. She was like, yeah, maybe with a little bit more of a crass tone. And then the tattoo artist was like, well, you know, I have to say you'd look pretty cool with a head tat. And I was like, oh, my God, a head tat. I was like, what does that even mean? And she's like, well, my husband wanted one, but to be honest, he couldn't handle the pain. And I was like, whoa, what do you mean? Like what? And for whatever reason, that kind of sounded like a interesting challenge for me. It's like, oh, your husband couldn't deal with it. Maybe I could, blah, blah. And I was like, well, if you got it on your head, like, will my hair grow back? And she kind of looked at me like, duh. And I was like, okay.
It's a good question.
Sure. I was like, fine. She said, why don't you just look through the books and pick something out? And if you're really feeling it, we can talk. And I'm like, okay. I pick out this, you know, tattoo basically of a Chinese dragon head with the body of a vine. And I put them together to kind of make the shape of a seahorse that would fit the right side of my head, right in between my hairline, so no one could see it. And she said, why don't we make an appointment for next Sunday? And if you come, I'll do it for free. And if you don't, no hard feelings. And I was like, okay, cool. Didn't even think about it during the week at all. And my girlfriend, Taylor Trabulous, what a name. Okay, Taylor Trabulous. She plotted with my friends. And that next Sunday morning, I woke up to six of my girlfriends in my apartment, literally taking a razor to my head. And Taylor actually bicked the side of my head. And when I saw how white my scalp was, I was like, fuck, I guess I'm gonna go get a tattoo. And I was like, you might as well, like, look at my bald ass head. By the way, the haircut was not cute. I was like, what the hell? Now my head is shaved. Like, I kind of have to do this. So,
you do.
And I was dating this guy. I don't even know
what follow-up question
I was
to
dating
ask.
This guy at the time, who's actually the son of Michael McCarty of Michael's restaurant. So, foodie fam. And I remember Chaz was like, he's like, you're not going to go through with this. He's like, I know you, like, da, da, da. And we had just started dating. And I was like, you don't know me. And I remember being like, let's go, girls. And we
so
literally
you thought
got
it was
in the car. Did
you think it was funny that your girlfriends did this? Because I might have killed my girlfriends.
I honestly was so mad, but there was nothing I was going to be able to do about it. So I kind of just had to, like, make the best of the situation, which, you know me, always turning something into a positive. So we literally went, and it took 8 hours. I had a half hour break between the outline and the filling in. And
are there photos
of the process?
Pre-social media, right?
Yeah, not really.
Oh my God.
I know, pre-social media.
So wait,
media.
The story says you were like crying. You were
I was in pain. Ugh. I was definitely like whimpering the whole time. I don't even think I had like an iPod or whatever to like listen to music on. And I don't think I even had like wireless. I definitely didn't have wireless headphones, but I don't even know if I had like earbuds because I couldn't wear anything that went over my head either. Oh. Right. So that was really difficult. But my girlfriend stayed with me the entire time. Like not one person left or anything. And we all got dinner afterwards and they were all like, oh my God, I can't believe you just did this.
I mean, you're walking around with half your head shaved.
I look like Jekyll and Hyde.
Okay.
So, yeah. So then later that night, Chaz came to my apartment and he walked in and he was like, see, I knew you didn't. And as he said it, I turned my head and he literally just froze. I mean, it was a shocking. It was also very fresh. I mean, it was a little scabbed, I'm sure, too. Like, not attractive.
Did it look cool?
It looked
ultimately
so freaking cool. Oh, my God.
Can you believe you did it?
No, I couldn't. And people, it was crazy. Now I feel like I kind of know what people feel like when, like, people thought I was super extreme. You know what I mean? Like, people looked at me and either thought, like, I was straight edge, right? Or that I was, like, gonna hurt someone. Like, it was really intense. Like, the amount of, like, looks and, like, I'd never cared what people thought about me. And actually, this was a really good test for me because I knew the things like that people were saying and thinking were so far from. And to be honest, I still don't really understand why I did what I did. But I definitely was going through some sort of identity, like, I don't even know, you know, just like going for it. And
talk about the power of appearance, though. I mean,
yeah, seriously. I mean, that was really.
I can imagine like the extreme reactions people had to what you did.
It was really. And I kept my head shaved for about 2.5 years.
Wow, you did.
Yeah. Okay. And so at the time.
Half your head or your whole head?
Half my head.
All right, let's talk about your family's reaction. So you showed your mom.
I showed my mom. My mom had the best reaction ever, which was like, way to choose a place on your body that won't sag. That's literally her first reaction. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that. But yes, like, of course you thought about that. My dad was more like he used the word mutilation. He was very upset. But I basically had my hair. I grew my hair out like an inch. It only took like 3 weeks to grow like an inch. And I had my hair like grown out a little bit. So when I told him, he couldn't really actually see it. So he was more so confused by the whole thing, which I think was better. But then he actually did see it a couple months later when we were at a family reunion. He was like, meet me for a drink before we go to dinner. And I had been wearing all these berets and wearing my hair to the different side and bows and like so that I wouldn't, so that my little sisters and brothers and my little cousins didn't see. Because I wasn't trying to like be like, I did this. I knew what I did was like a little extreme. And I wasn't trying to flaunt it in everyone's face. And I just totally forgot to like flip my hair when I went to meet my dad. And he nearly fainted. He really did. He nearly fainted. And it's so funny because now I'm literally getting texts from him every day being like, I bought this person your book and I bought the, and like, he just, it's like, he doesn't even remember that I have a tattoo. You know what I mean? It's hilarious.
That's so funny. Another thing I want to talk about is your hydration routine, because I literally don't know another human being who has a hydration routine. Maybe I have the wrong friends.
Oh my God.
But tell me what that even means.
So I have this routine, which it's funny because I didn't even realize that I do this really because it's so ingrained and I've been doing it now for about 6 years. So I don't eat and drink at the same time. It's difficult when you are out for dinner and you want to have a cocktail. Then I am. But for the most part, how I generally live my day-to-day life, I drink about 45 minutes to an hour before a meal and about 45 minutes to an hour after a meal. So I don't mix water and food together because for me, I've seen a huge difference in my digestive system and the way I eliminate my food, the bloat in my stomach, everything through kind of this routine. I will also say that I've noticed when I'm hungry and when I'm thirsty and how those are very different feelings for me. I try to drink like a liter of water before lunch, a liter of water after lunch, and like a big glass right when I wake up and a big glass right before bed. And that generally feels pretty good for me. Of course, there are days where I've had like a glass of water and I'm like, how is this even possible? And also, as I try to reduce my plastic waste and everything, I try not to buy plastic bottles, which kind of makes it a little bit difficult. I need to buy myself a Berkey. Do you have a Berkey?
I don't, but I'm right with you on the reusable.
Yeah, I got to get my Berkey going.
Or getting rid of like single-use plastic.
Single-use
and
plastic,
that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Really found that it's made a huge difference in the way I feel. And it's funny because I'll be sitting with my husband and he loves to eat and drink at the same time. And it like honestly just makes me cringe. And he gets stomach aches too. And I'm like,
but
just
I never
try this out.
Your book was the first time I really thought about the difference between being thirsty and being hungry.
Oh,
and
really?
If you are eating and I drink a lot of water during a meal, and then you'll be hungry later and you're like, why am I hungry? So I think it's a good way to get to know your body and what your body needs.
Totally. And I think it's a really good way of keeping yourself fuller longer. And it takes some time to get used to the idea of not drinking and eating at the same time. But I'm one of the people who really does believe that if you sit down and smell your food, right? Kind of the whole food and digestive process starts with your nose, because when you smell your food, that creates saliva, and in your saliva is all the enzymes that are needed to digest your food. And so then you'll actually create more saliva in your mouth that help food not be so dry, right? Hence where insert water there. Right. So if you can eliminate that and really take a moment to smell your food, and then you're eating your food and it's digesting and you don't need that extra water.
And you're chewing enough.
You're chewing enough. You're chewing too much. You're going to think you're over chewing. You're not. You're not chewing enough.
Yeah.
But then you chew down. Exactly. And then you keep chewing and mm-hmm. saliva, whatever. You know, it's like people these days, I feel like the idea of inhaling a dry muffin, like, makes someone, like, you're going to, like, choke. And that's, like, when you need, like, as much water as possible. But, like, smaller bites, taking your time, eating with people so there's conversation, kind of helps slow this process down of eating, which ultimately helps your digestion. And I also feel like when we slow down, we don't eat as much. In a good way.
You're smarter about what you're eating. And there's a mindfulness that you're bringing to the process.
Totally. And portion control is outrageous, right? Like, I don't think anyone really understands what a normal portion is for themselves. Just because what we're getting served at restaurants is, you know, it's not even considered what you should be eating for your body. It's considered for the price that you're paying.
since you called it a hydration routine, another thing you say in the book is that routines are key. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very interesting because so many people have a hard time establishing routines.
Yes. I think routines are really helpful for someone like me who needs time management and organization in my life. I have a lot of stuff going on, and if I didn't have methods or routines of getting work done while also prioritizing things for myself, I don't know how I would be a functioning person. And for me, execution is one of the biggest deliverables I can have as like a human in terms of like business or whatever. I'm not one to just like talk the talk. I really do want to execute and like deliver on my word. So routines have been like monumental for me.
And is that something that came naturally to you, or did you learn that you needed routine and structure over time?
Because I grew up in the ballet world, going to school, having extra curricular activities, I kind of liked having a structure and knew that like I was the type of person that benefited from having a structure. I kind of knew that growing up and kind of applied that to myself outside of like living at home.
Body image and weight. I know those are two huge things for you. You talk about that a lot in the book. I think that's one of the most important parts about your message. So when did you realize that that was something that you should talk about publicly? What did you see out there in the world that you thought, I need to add to this conversation, or I need to shift this conversation?
I guess I felt like I was seeing a lot of girls talk about their body, talk about their weight, talk about numbers and results. And for me, it stemmed from the idea that when I realized kind of I wasn't meant to be a ballerina, that like I wasn't going to...
Why weren't you meant to be a ballerina?
Like I just wasn't meant to be a ballerina in my life. And at 15, you know, I kind of realized that I didn't want to leave school and pursue ballet 24/7. And that was kind of like the make or break moment where, okay, if you're not going to do that, then you're not going to go down the path of being a professional dancer. And also, I didn't like the idea of starving myself and getting on a scale and having weigh-ins and all these type of things that also trickle over into the sports world, right? A little bit. So then, you know, that kind of happened in teenage years. And then come social media, you know, I realized that there's a lot of women who look beautiful and strong, but aren't necessarily talking about the struggle or the realness of it, right? That it's everything's like everyone's selling a product, everyone's drinking a protein shake, and you know, there's
detox tea. Yeah, I think that's the worst.
The detox tummy teas and the supplement you can use here. And it just felt like we were all striving to be this pinnacle of what the media was telling us we should look like. And I felt like I have really real women in my life who are all beautiful, look very different, have different bodies. And I see their struggle with weight and body acceptance because they've grown up generationally in a situation where they've been taught X, Y, and Z. Or, you know, my older sister who grew up, you know, thinking that everything should be low fat. Right. Like, you know, we've grown up with all these messages and things that have kind of really skewed the way we think about food and how it's supposed to affect our bodies. And I just kind of realized all of those things. And it's not like I was like, oh, I'm going to start talking about how I don't get on the scale. Like, I've never really said like, hey, I don't weigh myself. You just don't see that I've ever talked about weight as a number. Right. And I always talk about how you feel. Are you strong? Like, are you hitting your goals? Whatever those are, like, there's a way to approach body acceptance that does not necessarily include, you know, a scale and opinions of others.
What's your favorite recipe in the book?
My favorite recipe in the book, I'm in a matcha mood just because I just had a delicious matcha, but the matcha vegan cheesecake is really...
Oh, we're
going to
make
for.
That. we have matcha right in there.
Ooh, love that.
What's in it?
A lot of cashews, coconut cream, matcha, some dates. Yeah, it's okay. Delish.
We'll take a picture and we'll tag you.
Amazing. I like it. To call it healthy hedonism.
Healthy hedonism.
Yeah,
love it.
You know, because it's like we all want to indulge. We just want like better things to indulge in. You know what I mean? I was just reading this article over the weekend about health junk food. I'm like, you can't have
There's so much health junk food, though,
because junk food inherently is not healthy. It's like, okay, if you know that you're trying to satisfy the craving for Doritos, sure, choosing the, you know, Dorito-flavored cauliflower chips is probably better, but it's still not a whole food. It's a processed food that you're getting in a bag. But I mean, I love those types of snacks here and there, but it was just interesting.
We sometimes are flooded with those snacks. Yeah. I have to be careful because people love to send those to us and they're always yummy.
They are.
All right. We're going to do a little speed round.
Okay, great.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Song that makes you smile?
There's a song called Liberation by Leon Bridges and Dev Loesch. And it's really, it puts a smile on my face.
One thing you'll never eat.
I'm not a lamb person.
Last book you read or tried to read?
Plant Paradox by Dr. Gundry.
Favorite cookbook?
Ooh. I have a cookbook from a woman who has a soul food restaurant uptown. It's called Spoon Bread. And I always use hers as like a starting off point and try to make a healthier version of her comfort foods.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Most used kitchen utensil?
My Vitamix.
Snack you carry around in your purse or bag?
An avocado.
You carry around an avocado?
It's the easiest and least messy snack ever.
You're the first person who said that.
Really? Okay. Like just a half with like everything bagel seasoning on it. It's perfect.
Great. Okay. Last question. If you had to be trapped on a desert island with any food celebrity, who would it be?
With a food celebrity? Oh my goodness. This is hard, though. I feel like I need someone who's got, like, really good skills, who's not going to, like, be too moody. I mean, honestly, I would say Chrissy Teigen, but I don't know if, like, we could go, like, the rest of our lives together. Like, I think a week would be so fun. But, but I guess I'll just say
Chrissy Teigen. That's a great...
I love that I'm saying answers that people haven't said before. I'm so unique. I think the other person I would probably say is, like, maybe like
Chrissy Teigen's gonna be pissed that you changed your answer.
Well, I like her for a week. I just don't know if we're compatible for the rest of our lives. You know what I mean?
Maybe you get rescued after 7 days.
Well, then if we get rescued after 7 days, then I'm going with Chrissy Teigen.
All right. Well, Hannah, you are so awesome.
Thank
I love
you
talking
so much
to you.
Thank you for having me.
I've told you this before. I mean, we're totally different generations, but I learned so much from you every time I talk to you. And
thank you.
I've gotten a lot of great stuff reading your book. So
that makes me so happy.
Thanks
thank
for putting
you again
it out
for
there.
Having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Bye.
Bye.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to Hannah Bronfman for talking with us about her new book, Do What Feels Good, which is out now. In case you were wondering, yes, I have already started working on my personal hydration routine. However, I won't be getting a head tattoo anytime soon. But never say never. If you enjoyed my conversation with Hannah, be sure to check out our interview from last year. You can find it on our website, cherrybomb.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, let me know who you would like to hear on a future episode. Thank you to our sponsor, Hansabrook Farm, for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb. Special thanks to our associate producer and our very own Riot Girl, Jess Zeidman. And thank you to the band Cha La La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Hello, my name is Elizabeth Rago, and I am an author and editor of The Modern Domestic Woman. Do you want to know who I think is the bomb? Katie McCall, owner and pastry chef at Two Wild Seeds Baking Company, because she's inspired me to slow down and enjoy the little things in life. An excellent baker and a sincere supporter of women-owned businesses, Katie's certainly stirring up more than just macaroons and cupcakes in her community.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners just like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.